Canto 32. Drowned in their object after 10 years' thirst, my eyes were so intent, all other sense was quelled in me. But while they were immersed in that, they had only indifference for all else. In that way, the holy smile had drawn them to it with the same old net. But then the goddesses, in their own style, turned my attention left. "Too fixed as yet," they said, referring to my gaze so keen on revelation that it still was blind. And blind I was, as if my eyes had been scorched by the sun. But when a lesser kind of object drew my sight, lesser, I mean, beside the greater from which I withdrew out of necessity, then what was seen through my dazed eye was soon adjusted to, being within my range, and so I saw the glorious army, after a right wheel, returning with the sun and 7 more flames in its face. As rounding on its heel, a squadron saves itself beneath its shields, turning its colors while the generals hold their main face full front as that squadron yields, just so the holy soldiers with their gold and guiding banners came by in the van, and thus the pole brought round the car. Again the ladies sought the wheels where they began, and so the holy griffin, now as then, shifted its blessed cargo, showing none of all its feathers shaken. Statius, Matilda, the fair flower-gathering one, and I allowed the right wheel to lead us, the inner wheel that made the smaller loop. And as we travelled through the lofty wood, left empty by her fault who was the dupe of that false serpent and thought his words good, angelic music timed our steps. The flight of just one arrow, 3 times multiplied, we'd gone, perhaps, when Beatrice, from her height, came down. And from them all, from every side, I heard the murmur, "Adam." And then they encircled a bare tree, its flowers stripped like all its foliage, and its display of branches, with no green stuff clad or tipped, spread wider as it climbed up and away, looking like piled-up hair which Indians would marvel at for height. They who grow tall trees in their woods. "You're blessed to have no plans, Griffin. For plucking anything at all with your beak from this tree with its sweet taste, lest your guts twist in torment." Thus they cried, from that ring round the tree where they were placed, and the animal twice born said, "There inside the seed is kept safe of all righteousness." He turned then to the shaft he'd pulled, and drew the car close to the foot of that leafless, seemingly widowed trunk, and tied it to the tree with just one branch of that same tree. As our plants, when the mighty light that falls on them has joined the second sign of 3, the carp, the ram, the bull, for what earth calls the spring, begin to swell in panoply, their colors all renewed, before the sun moves on to the next stars to yoke its steeds. Just so I saw renewal had begun for this bare tree, whose mere description needs the tint of Christ's blood, less deep than the rose, but deeper than the violet. The hymn the company sang then, nobody knows down here, nor did I even have a dim idea of what it meant when I was there. I only knew that hearing what they sang right through was simply more than I could bear. The eyes of Argos, without pity's pang, by being told of Syrinx, went to sleep. The eyes whose long watch over Io cost so much, if by my writing hand I could keep to that same standard, nothing need be lost. As painters paint a model, I could tell how slumber overcame me. But let that be done by one who wants to do it well. I pass to when I woke up, startled at a brightness breaking through the sleepy veil, and heard the call, "What are you doing? Rise!" As when their master, Jesus, made them scale Tabor, the 3 apostles filled their eyes with his transfiguration, and a glance at blossoms of the apple trees that make the angels crave its fruit, and drives the dance of heaven's perpetual marriage feast, it takes only a glimpse to leave the viewer stunned. And Peter, John and James fell to the ground in sleep, but Jesus, from his fund of rousing words, found those to bring them round, and they awoke to find their schools was short of Moses and Elias, and the bright light of Christ's robe was no more what they'd thought had been a transcendental blinding white, so I came to. and there I saw again, standing above, she that before had been my guide, Matilda. She had helped me when I stepped along the river. "Have you seen Beatrice? Where is she?" I said, all in doubt. And she, "Look there beneath that new-grown green. She's seated on the tree's root, hedged about with just the seven virtues. All the rest followed the griffin upward with a song sweeter and deeper yet." If she addressed me longer, I don't know. I could be wrong, perhaps she did, but now the one was here before me who had turned my cares to calm. And there on the bare ground she sat, so near, left there to keep the chariot from harm, where that two-natured beast put it to stand. The seven nymphs were strung into a ring that formed her cloister. Each held in one hand a candelabrum, never fluttering in north wind or in south, as in our land it would. "Here you will be a little while a forester, and citizen always of that high Rome in which Christ has the style of Roman. The world falls on evil days, but for the good in it, look closely now, and what you see, write down when you return yonder." Thus Beatrice, and I, whose bow at her command had nothing left to learn of the submissive, gave my eyes and mind as she wished. Never fire came from dense cloud downward so swiftly from where lie confined the vapors in the high air than the proud eagle of Jove tore down through the fresh leaves and flowers, and not just them. It stripped the bark. It struck the car, which, as a ship that heaves before the storm, reeled to the leeward mark. Then to the windward, cast there by the waves, and then I saw a fox jump at the car. A starved fox, kept alive by robbing graves. My lady mocked its foulness, and as far as fleshless bones allowed, it turned and ran. And then the eagle, from its former place, dived in again and rapidly began to feather the car's insides from the base on upwards with its plumage, and a cry as from a grieving heart I heard descend from heaven. "Little boat, you're weighed down by such ill." And I saw something rend the earth between the wheels. A dragon reared upward and drove its tail through the car's floor. And as a wasp takes back the sting it speared into the flesh, I saw the thing withdraw its evil tail and wander off. And what was left was decked again, as fertile soil with dog grass by the plumage, which was not, perhaps, intended solely to despoil, but offered with a pure and gracious heart. And both wheels and the shaft were cloaked with it, in less time than a sigh keeps lips apart, and thus transformed, the frame grew heads to fit its holy structure. Three grew on the shaft, one at each corner, and the three were horned like oxen, and the two fore and two aft had one horn from the forehead each. "Be warned, for such a monster never has been seen." But here it was, a mountain fort. Secure, an ungirt harlot, with brows arched to mean sheer boldness, sat there, all set to endure as property, it seemed, to him that loomed behind her. For a giant leaned to kiss her lips, and she reached up, and they assumed their kissing pose again, and then did this again, and then again. But then she turned her wanton eyes on me. And that great beast, that savage lover, when he looked and learned that she had done so, switched from his love feast to beating her from head to foot, and then, still occupied with his colossal rage and deep suspicion, let her go again enough to drag her, in his wild rampage, away until the wood obscured my view of harlot and strange brute. But still I could tell what these symbols were referring to. For there depicted was the foul embrace of France and Holy Church, the latter gone to lewd seed in the reign of Boniface, and then with Clement gone to Avignon. The car, that Christ the Griffin had left tied to Empire's tree, beset from every side.